Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Dr. Jeff Pahn, Chief Human Capital Officer at the U.S. Department of Energy. Also joining us in our conversation is Sally Thomas, Associate Partner in IBM's Human Capital Practice. Jeff, workforce planning is vital in helping your leadership draw a clear picture of the nature of the current and future human resource decisions. Could you describe your efforts to enhance and institutionalize workforce planning within DOE, and to what extent does DOE's technical qualification program assist in these efforts?
Well, workforce planning is central to human capital management, first of all. It's a contract between the programmatic manager and human resources. With a workforce plan, you actually have a forecast and model on what their priorities are, who they're going to be recruiting, what their next 100 hires are going to be, who they're developing. Those are things that are so important to our organization in identifying, and each and every manager needs to have that. I'm sitting down with each and every one of our assistant secretaries and going through their workforce plans. I expect them to actually understand what is their workforce, what is it composed of, where does it need to be in 1, 3, and 5 years, and how are we going to be closing the gap through that make, rent, or buy type of strategy, which is how do we recruit them, how do we develop them, how do we supplement them from a contractor workforce perspective. So that's a very important aspect of work of our human capital strategy. It's effective workforce plans and how we roll those things up and integrate that into our strategic workforce planning process. In terms of the DOE technical qualifications program, obviously human capital, one thing that we aren't experts in is in the technical aspects of our technical workforce. I mean, we have nuclear engineers, physicists, tooling and manufacturing type of vocations. We can't know it all. So what these forums do, actually, they set certain types of criteria or standards, maybe towards certifications, just like we've done in our contracting workforce and our programmatic workforce. So there are a lot of more certifications coming out of that. But then it really balances out the understanding of what it is that you do from a technical aspect, what it is that you do from a leadership perspective and a management perspective. And that is really the competency profile that we have as the Department of Energy. And we operationalize that through our competency management approach. And we're not there yet, but we're developing that and pulling it all together. Again, these last several years, it's been the effort to pulling it all together so that everybody's at the table in deciding what is a corporate model for the competency management and workforce planning.
Jeff, along similar lines, you described earlier for us the composition or the mix between contractors and federal employees at the Department of Energy. Could you tell us how federal managers can effectively manage this ever-increasing blended workforce composed of the two? And what are some of the key differences intrinsic to these two core groups of federal employees and contractors?
That's one of the chief challenges that I have here in the department. I view my role as not just caring for the federal workforce. It's really taking a look at our whole entire workforce, probably one of the more unique organizations in its profile, because 90% of our workforce are contractors, and our contractors work on some engineering feats that are simply amazing, like the National Ignition Facility, where fusion technology is happening, Stanford Linear Accelerator, International Hadron Colliders. A lot of these things are engineering marvels and feats. But what's important to understand is where does our workforce need to have its greatest talent, and what are we doing about it? My approach to this is making sure that the knitting is done for the federal workforce first. So we have our strategic plan. We have our workforce, integrated workforce plan as a whole entire organization. I'm making that public to our contractors because there are certain things that the Department of Energy is not very well equipped on doing. Nuclear engineers, for instance, out of college, they're getting offers, 10 to 15 offers, for about $100,000 to $120,000. And as you know, on our GS or general schedule, we can pay a college grad at the general schedule 7, step 10, about $46,000, $47,000. There's a huge disparity on that. I realize as an effective manager that I can't compete on a compensation basis. but our contractors can. So when we identify that skills gap, hopefully they're doing something about it. So we're mapping out for a workforce plan for each and every one of our sites. So as people ebb and flow on the federal workforce or on the contracting workforce, the institutionalization of the process of workforce planning will be something that is comprehensive across our organization. That's what we're doing in managing a multi-sector workforce. I think many government agencies will have that challenge as we go from smaller workforce, larger workforce, contractor expertise or not. Federal government really does have a vested interest on understanding and working with their contractor workforce too, because at the end of the day, there's only a certain amount of scientists, technology, engineering, and mathematicians around the world.
Great. It sounds like you're driving a certain level of collaboration also with your contractor community.
Absolutely, to within the laws of the FAR, but making sure that we are voluntarily giving them information and telling them that it's not you must do in their contract, but it's here's what we're doing. Does it make sense for you to participate in on these things on a voluntary basis? And quite frankly, from a strategic point of view, they understand the importance of participating in on this cross-collaboration and being effective competitors within their own fields too.
Jeff, staying on the theme of competing for talent, can you talk a little bit about what changes you're making to the recruitment process at Energy? And on the same wave, does the agency use flexible compensation strategies to attract and retain quality employees?
Sully, I think we're doing everything we can within the law from exercising the three R's and really taking a look at how we manage the workforce is a very difficult thing when you have certain types of capabilities within your own HR organization. I'll be frank, we don't do enough in recruiting as a government. I know that there's job fairs that we go to time, but I take a look at the private sector and who we're directly competing with. One technology organization that has about 13,000 people has a workforce of 400 recruiters working in that one part of their business. In my part of my business, I can count my recruiters on 10 fingers. So that's just from a numbers standpoint, we are encumbered upon how much resource we have in doing recruiting, active recruiting. We should be taking a look at our perspectives on that. But what we're doing about it, despite the resource challenge that we have, is really taking a look at a long-term perspective. And many, I guess, administrations really don't focus on the 10-year type thing, but we have to as a nation in my role. We're looking at high schools and colleges. We sponsor the National Science Bowl that just concluded. While we do direct recruiting and post our jobs on the website, we're going with the Department of Labor and Education along with the Department of Energy with this thing's called the American Competitiveness Initiative. And it's really reinvesting in our education structure, in our labor, key markets in our labor force, and also in science and technology. And we're making concerted efforts and working together towards recruiting, enabling scholarships, grants to internships to federal service or contractor organizations. We have internship programs that come and go. But what we're trying to do right now is really wire the process where we're getting them excited about science and technology, taking the pre-algebra algebra, because if they don't, it's over already, and really encouraging them to take internships in our complex, whether it's in our contractor workforce or on our federal side, and mapping out where they want to go and keeping them there, because I can't sell them on the dollars associated with it. Sure, you're compensated on a fair and equitable way in the federal government, but just taking a look at our science mission and taking a look at the importance of our mission as a nation, you take a look at what's happening in the Generation Y or millennials, they're not there to hop from job to job to job. They're really trying to take a grasp of what can I do and how can I have continuity? How can I make a meaningful contribution in this nation?
Jeff, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the Department of Energy's learning management system. Maybe you could talk a little about how it enables Energy to more closely link training to competencies and also to employees' career plans. And on a related note, what plans does Energy have to develop an enterprise e-learning strategy as a way of shifting from a classroom-based to a more technology-enabled learning environment?
Yeah, we have a long ways to go here. I used to be the e-training acting project manager. I was tasked with implementing learning management systems across the federal government. here at the Department of Energy, we have a very good learning management system that is more on the forefront of integrating a lot of the point solutions that we have. So you can't really talk about learning management solutions without the content, without the competency management type of tools, which invariably are separate. And I think the software space right now is trying to integrate that. And the companies that I think are doing very well are the organizations that conceptually get it. Understanding that competency management is the basis of identifying your skills gaps and having that gap actually linked to your recruitment and assessment tools, linked towards your development and training things, IDPs, individual development planning. And the companies that I think will survive and be the leaders in this space will be the organizations that actually integrate a lot of the point solutions that we all love but are poorly integrated right now. So in the Department of Energy, we have these tools. But we have a challenge in integrating these things. We come from a very strong training, instructor-led type of culture. So either you're training or you're working, as opposed to a blended learning where you can take a class and then actually study on your own in asynchronous type of learning and e-learning, or even just the e-learning type of courses with the different types of libraries and resources. Now in this day, it's what version do you want it in? You know, how many different citations do you have to have? So the way in which we're trying to adapt to technology is very much a bifurcated strategy because we have on the one hand an exiting population that is used to doing certain things a certain way. And at the same time, you have a on-demand type of generation that expect nothing but the best graphics, the best type of simulation and interactiveness, or else you'll lose their attention. So there's a big challenge between balancing the two. But we're doing both and blending those things and making sure that the options are there. But the challenge is the utilization of a learning management system and using that as an effective strategy for cost avoidance and the learning experience.
Jeff, we spent a fair amount of time talking about the workforce within the department. I want to transition a little bit now to the leadership portion of the organization. What are some of the efforts at DOE to ensure continuity of leadership through succession planning and executive development?
I like to define my terms first. Succession planning is something different than what I was accustomed to. When you talk about succession planning on a best practice basis, you hearken to the GE Session C type of models or different things like that where you put your high-performance people and your high-potential people on a 2x2 grid, and you might have 9 different squares and see what you do with the northeast quadrant, which we all know about, and the bottom quadrant, which is a really easy thing to do too. But it's the middle part that you need to figure out what to do with. In the federal government, I don't know of many agencies that actually do really succession planning. We do replacement charting. If Bob leaves, who are we going to replace them with? And that's what we're doing. We have replacement charting, comprehensive plan to make sure that we know who's going to be coming in and coming out while the changes of administration happen. Where's your career staff that's going to be the bedrock and foundation for the next 1, 3, 5 years? It's impressive to know that the Deputy Secretary of Energy wants to ensure that the career people are solid and intact, and he prides himself in making sure that those critical decisions are made on a consistent basis. He chairs our Executive Resources Board, and we make sure that we're identifying the future leaders so that the Department of Energy actually has some continuity going forward. That's a very important aspect of taking a long-term view of management and succession. Our government does not identify leaders across. That's what the SES was designed for first. We don't rotate across very, very readily or anything like that. So we need to do a better job at that. We're doing a lot, but we are not doing enough.
What does the future hold for the Department of Energy's human capital efforts? We will ask Dr. Jeff Pond, Chief Human Capital Officer at the U.S. Department of Energy, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.